BeastNet is brought to you by James Safety Services and in partnership with Beast OCR. Here we discuss all things OCR and fitness related, running, endurance, conditioning, rucking, and more. Welcome to BeastNet.
Hey everybody, welcome to BeastNet. Today you've got Brother Boggs hosting in place of Pretty Mike, who's out with something he's got going on. So tonight we've got Allison Ty of Grit Farm OCR. Many of you might know her name from racing in the Northwest, or if you follow Tough Mudder or Obstacle World Championships. She's kind of been everywhere and podium quite a few times. So let's just start the show. How are you doing, Allison?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. It is a very sunny, wonderful day down here in Washington, and you're just a few miles north, so I'm hoping it's about the same there.
Oh, yeah. No, it's been gorgeous. We actually moved out of the big city of Vancouver and up into the Fraser Canyon, and it's a little bit hotter and a little bit drier, and pretty much every day has been perfect weather. Even when it does rain, it's like a warm shower coming down, so... I'm interested to see what the shoulder seasons and the winter is bring, but so far the weather has just been like ridiculously nice every day.
Well, you can't ask for anything better when you're out there training.
Oh yeah, no kidding.
So let's tell the listeners a little bit about yourself. Who's Allie Ty, and what got you into OCR?
Oh man, so I this is a long story, but basically, I was really not fit, really not into anything remotely athletic growing up. And it wasn't until I went back to college as a mature student that I found cross-country running. And I figured out pretty fast that although I sucked at running short, I was pretty good at suffering. And I could run, you know, pretty steady. I'd never be fast. I never will be fast. But I could run pretty steady for like a sustained amount of time. So that's how I got into it. Just with cross-country running, and then I started doing some Ironman stuff, and then I actually got hit on the highway on my bicycle, and I ended up breaking my back and all this, and it was kind of a slow process back, and a long recovery back to athletics and where I was, and at that point, I was doing some, like, ultra marathons and things like that in the mountains and really getting into the trail side of things, and so... Then I broke my back and my hip and my arm, got a ton of nerve damage and stuff, and couldn't even roll myself over in bed for like 6 months. I was in a full body cast. And then when I started to get back into it, I started doing more cross training. So, you know, things like CrossFit and just being in the gym, and I got my personal training certification. And so I started to kind of dive into different aspects of fitness, and I was still coaching running through this entire thing. And I was coaching at this local running store in Vancouver. And the owner there had convinced me to do this Warrior Dash, right? The Gateway OCR. And so I did it, and I was like so mad at her. I was like, this is so dumb. I'm a real runner. I am not going to run this like goofy thing. Everybody's eating these giant turkey legs and wearing these silly hats. But I did it, and I kind of was like holding back with the rest of the group with this other girl that I was friends with, and we ran together, and we're like, you know, this would be really fun if you actually did it like really fast and we could like race each other. And so then we decided we'd do another one. And so, you know, then it was the Spartan, and then we started to get kind of competitive and push each other. And so it was really that kind of spurred it on. And then just the Ultra Beasts and stuff like that coming out, I was like, hey, this like really is for me, right? You're out in the mountains, you're doing all this like functional stuff that I just love. It's like a big adventure day. And so it was really the long distance stuff that I really fell in love with quickly. And I guess I just kind of went from there, right? You do Ultra Beasts, you do World's Toughest Mudder, did the OCR World Championships. The Spartan Ultra Beast World Championship that first year in Iceland. I just all these like long, grueling, but fun. And like, you know, it's really a good way to find what your threshold is and who you are as a person, and just kind of really build your character and get yourself able to withstand absolutely anything in life and keep a positive attitude. So I'm just super grateful to have had the experience that I've had in really long distance OCR, and it's been a lot of fun.
Well, that's an awesome story. The long distance running, myself and the other two hosts just started getting into marathons and starting to train. We're looking 2 years out before we'll get into an Ultra Beast. I don't know if you saw any pictures. None of us are in the lean shape. We're in the shape of round, and we've been getting better at it. We started out our first marathon. Pretty Mike finished up right around, I think it was 9 hours, and then I got him back out back in June and got him down to 8 hours. So our goal is to get us down under 5 hours, and that ultra marathon and ultra running is just something that we find amazing when we talk to people who do that. Last week or the week before, we actually had a 100 mile marathon runner that had done 31 marathons in 31 days to raise money for mental health awareness.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's exactly what we told him also, is that was crazy. 31 marathons in 31 days. So we kind of got a little bit of a background on you. A little while back, you opened up a training gym, and it kind of went through some changes, and now you've got the farm. You actually have a full working farm now, don't you?
Yeah, so we did the indoor gym route, and there's a bunch of things, you know, like the business partner that I was in with ordered these floors from China because they were on sale. But then it was like this really intense, like, off-gassing that we thought would go away, and it just almost seemed to get worse. And then my husband and I both were like, we don't actually want to be inside. So the gym went the Ninja Warrior route, you know, and I was training and racing a lot. And you know, there was just some kind of friction stuff that wasn't, we just had like very different, the guy that I went into business with, very different ideologies. Like, I'm super into like community building and stuff like that, and he was very much more into the business aspect. And we quickly realized like, this is just not working, and this is not where we want to be. So it's hard when you pour your heart and soul into a business, right? But I kind of slowly started to move on from that and develop other things. So we started doing, actually my husband builds obstacle courses, and he had long before this. So he goes into the schools and he actually brings all this obstacle course equipment, sets up these obstacle courses in schools, and, you know, does like really neat functional sports days and things like that. So we're always doing that. And then we have like a little mini setup in our backyard in Vancouver, where people would come and train, you know, on the walls and the rigs and all that, so ropes, and we'd have all that set up. But it was squishy in Vancouver, right? And we're like, we need more room. So we moved out here. And so now we're on like 98 acres, basically on the side of a mountain. We have a trailhead that I can like see right now if I look across my yard that goes into like thousands and thousands of acres. Like, you could run basically, I don't know if you guys know this edge of the Pacific Northwest at all, but you could run from my house, which is in Canyon Alpine, just kind of north of Hope, all the way to Merritt. You could run to Whistler, like on these back, because it was originally a gold rush area, and then they developed forestry. So we have all these like little gold rush routes, and it's very, very historic. So it's really neat because there's all these very like established, but as of late haven't really been explored to their fullest, and they're just gorgeous. Like, you know, I have neighbors that are like, oh yeah, you know, we'll go hiking or cycling or whatever through these crazy paths, and you're up on this ridge and it's like you don't see another person, right? So it's really, really a weird little place that we moved into, and it was just kind of happenstance. We weren't looking in the area. But we're less than 2 hours from the Lower Mainland, and yet it's like we are absolutely worlds away. Like, nobody here even had cell phones or internet. They all have yellow pages. It's just like total blast from the past. But yeah, it's really remote. It's a really friendly little community. There's this amazing trail system that we back onto, and this just gorgeous farm. It needs work, definitely. It hasn't been shown the love it deserves in the last few years, but my husband and I and our kids have just been working really, really hard to get it up to snuff, and we're setting up a permanent obstacle course here. So we just put a platinum rig up in one of our barns today, which kind of is awesome. It fits really well, and you know, some walls and things like that. So we're starting to build out this permanent obstacle course here, you know, where we can train people and just hold events. And it'll be really good, I think, for the community too, right? To kind of get behind these events, and they're really, really excited about it. Because although I don't have a grocery store you can walk to anywhere from my house, I do have two restaurants that are like top notch on Yelp that I could walk to, right? Because it's an old tourism area, and then the highway closed down. And so now you have this like super dense tourist area that doesn't actually see that many tourists because we're now on an off route because they built the Coquihalla. And so this highway's kind of been underutilized now. So it's a really, really interesting area and one that I think that we could really make a big impact on, just in terms of getting people out here and seeing it and exposing people from Vancouver, from Seattle to just new places that they can run and ride their bike. We have a brand new swimming pool, which is crazy to me, just down in this tiny little town. They even have to get lifeguards out from Hope 40 minutes away just to man it because they don't have lifeguards in this itty bitty little town, but they have this brand new outdoor pool. So, you know, we're just hoping to kind of get people out here and just enjoying the nature and everything that this kind of area has going for it that just nobody knows about. It's like the best kept secret in the Lower Mainland. It's a joke, actually. People in this neighborhood are like, you know, if you're like, I can't believe people from the Lower Mainland don't know about here. And they're like, shh, you know, don't say anything. Don't let them know. Just as a joke that it is super quiet. You know, there's no regulations. There's nothing. It's just like the Wild West out here. It's pretty neat that such a place exists so close to such a big, you know, major center.
That is really cool. A lot of the beasts this weekend, we've kind of partnered up with a family farm down in Randall, Washington, about 2.5-3 hours south of Seattle. And it's the same thing. It's a big couple hundred acre farm right up against the hills and mountains. And we had a camp out there this weekend with them going through and we're building a permanent race course out on their place too. And a couple weeks ago, we spoke with Sandra Hanses of Renegade Rage, her race series down at her farm. It kind of seems to be a direction that the OCR athletes who are serious about doing it have been doing, at least in the Northwest. I'm learning about more and more. Claire Painter over in OMAC, she's got the OMAC Warrior Stampede that she's putting on here in a couple weeks. And she got that, she took that over when she got back from being on American Grit, the TV show, because she wanted to have her own race. She's got her own farm, the Barefoot Ranch. And she was saying the same thing. She's going to build a permanent obstacle course out there too. So at that rate, with the oars, we're going to have like 4 permanent obstacle courses right up here within just a few hours, you know, of Seattle and Vancouver.
That is cool. I mean, the marriage just works so well, right? Like, I know for me, I took my family, you know, around the world doing races, you know, like Australia and Germany and everything last year. And it was really hard because they want to come and they want to watch me race, but what are they doing the rest of the time, right? So, you know, they all are kind of involved, even my little ones. They do the kids race and all that, but it's just not. So like here we'll have like the horses and the petting zoo and, you know, like different things that the whole family can do, like ponds and riding bikes and just like different little games and stuff that the kids can do. And I mean, we'll have a kids obviously obstacle course as well. But it just makes a lot of sense that people want to go out to nature, you know, and they want to better themselves on their vacations now. It's like the, you know, a lot of people are realizing like they don't want to go and sit on a beach, right, and drink. They feel like and eat junky food. They just feel like crap when they get home, right? So I think more and more people are realizing they want to unplug and get out into nature and like move their body and come back to their regular lives just feeling really good. So that's kind of our thing. Just, you know, we're setting up a bunch of like those like glamping tents and we have they already just had a bed and breakfast downstairs in our house here. And we have a bunch of different cabins and stuff like that and RVs, you know, that people can just rent and get away and they don't even need to do the obstacle course race. Like our obstacle courses, we'll just have those up anyways. Right. So for our own use, but it just gives people some flexibility in terms of what they're doing, on their vacations and, yeah, just gives them something really cool to do when you get, cause otherwise, you know, you've always been to those places, like you go camping or something and there's like zip to do. And it's amazing to be out in nature, but people are trying to like, oh, do I go hiking? Do I do this? So just to have people come and be like, okay, so we're going to go for a trail run at this time or a hike up to the mountain. It's funny. We actually have this like trail behind our house on our property that goes up to this giant cross. And it's like, three stories high and it's lit up at night on our property, but it just overlooks the canyon. It's just amazing. It's the last owners built it. So it's just, it's a very unique little place we have here And it is like, it's hard. You were saying that it's like a farm that butts up against a mountain. That's hard. Like, we looked for so long for property where it was like usable farmland and then mountains, because it either is like way too rugged and way too steep that the acreage is just not usable because you're like on the side of a mountain that's going to fall on you at any time, or you're like flat and in a sea of other little acreages, right? So it's like the Goldilocks thing, right? When you're looking for a specific place like this, is to find the mountain and the usable acreage all together. Because, you know, we have the horses and the goats and the chickens and the dogs, and we need, you know, that aspect. But we really, really, it was so important to be able to like reach out and touch the mountains and just have miles of trails to explore. So yeah, it worked out really well. And it's super cool to see that, you know, a lot of other people are down that same path.
All right. And now we're going to take a quick pause so we can hear from our sponsors.
Do you like challenges that are fun, tough, and might use tacos? Head on over to beastchallenge.com and check out our upcoming events, including Beasts 5K Plus, a combination of race and endurance event, and the Bucket Mile. Keep an eye on the Beasts OCR Facebook group for event gatherings. For more information, head on over to beastchallenge.com and the Beasts OCR Facebook group. You'll be glad you did.
And we're back.
That's actually, like I said, it's a real surprise that a lot of people are doing that, but I'm understanding why, because you look at some of these race events that travel around, like Spartan and then Tough Mudder and Rest in Peace Warrior Dash and Rugged Maniac, all those ones that travel around, and a lot of them use the same venues. I'm sure you've been down to the Cloverdale Rodeo stands there in Surrey. For some of the events they do there. And there's only so much you can do in a rodeo setting with a race.
Yeah, they are very strict. And we like to have really, like, we're small potatoes. Like, we have this, like, corn maze race where they run through the corn maze. And so we just have little, but they're always, like, 100 people-ish, you know, very small. And but that's what we want. Like, we don't want 1,000 person races and stuff like that. That's just not who we are and what we do. Like, we're very small potatoes and we're happy to be that way. And it's, you know, the setup, it just, it's hard and it doesn't make a lot of sense to be doing that all the time. You end up losing a lot of money. And it's something that we're passionate about. We go into it knowingly and, you know, that's fine. Like, that's something that we take on, but it is going to be a lot more fun to be able to throw on these events and have the course already set out, because that part sucks, you know, like building the courses and taking them down and then doing the race. And you just don't have the same enthusiasm that you would if you had the course already set up and then you could just put, you know, all the energy into those little details that I think a lot of the major race companies just kind of overlook at this point, right? Like, back in the day when you'd run a road race, even there'd be food after and like free parking and spectators are free and all this. And I'm like, what happened to that? You know, like, why are we not, like, it blew my mind that we were charging spectator fees for the first little while, because I was just like, why would you want people to come out and watch the race and then they do it next time, right? Like, with trail racing, you'd never see, like, oh, spectators, you have to watch to, you have to pay to watch these runners, you know, go up and down the mountain. If anything, half the time, you know, at these road races, they're, you know, they're creating these volunteer cheer squad teams just to give the runners more people to cheer for them, right? So that's always just kind of blown my mind. And I've always just been, you know, really hoping that the industry would turn and drop the spectator fees and stuff like that and try to encourage the public to come out and experience it, just secondhand kind of thing. But we'll see where it goes from there. But I think they lose sight of the details sometimes. And of course they do. I mean, it's so hard and so expensive to set up an obstacle course race, and people just don't realize, right? Which is fair enough. Of course they don't. But once you do it, then you're like, okay, I get this, Spartan. Yeah. Like, Warrior Dash, I see why you're tired. Like, it's a lot of work.
It really is. And the courses that seem to be more permanent built, they seem to get some better obstacles. Ones where like yourself or the other ones I mentioned previously, you know, you'll spend the time and come up with just new and exciting things that you just want to try, as where the other guys have to be able to pack it up, put it in a cargo container and move it.
Exactly. Yeah. And you even see that with the, you know, the big race brands, that things are kind of getting smaller, because the OCR communities, you know, it had that huge hype thing, you know, and everybody wanted to go into. And then now that it's shrinking down, I don't think it's going away by any means, but just like CrossFit or whatever, there's always that bubble. And then, you know, everybody's like, oh, hey, I'll check that off the list and I don't want to be electrocuted again, so they don't come back. Right. And so now they've had to kind of shrink things down a little bit and just make it more packable, which is 100% fair. Right. But when you have a permanent course, you do have the opportunity to just build these like ridiculous things or really use the terrain your backyard, you know, like we could throw a rope up the side of that cliff if we wanted to, you know, because it's ours. But it, when you're using a different like facility or venue, sometimes they're like, no, you can't dig here. You can't do this here. So you're really, especially in a place like Cloverdale, which is a rodeo grounds, you're really stuck, you know, with a fixed set of parameters, and you're not when it's your home course. So it should be really fun. I'm excited to get into that. Like I say, we haven't done as much, but now we're starting to get to that point where we're throwing the obstacles down and just kind of envisioning where we're going to put that, which is really, really fun.
So that being said, do you have any dates planned for any campouts or races next year yet?
Well, we're kind of roughly toying with the idea of doing something just for like our immediate community for the like New Year's Eve kind of thing. But if not for sure, by next spring, we're going to be kind of up and locked and loaded. We'll have like all the giant tents up for people to come and stay and the bed and breakfast thing set up and all that. And the course will definitely be up and just some different like toys and games and things for people to play with. So that'll all be for sure in the spring, but you know, we may do a few more events before then. We're comfortable enough right now that we could have people come in. It was a bit crazy, of course, when we first moved in, but we're definitely getting settled, and now we're thinking about the next season. And so we're going to sit down with the calendar and look at where the other races are and things like that, and try to plug in a few of our own events so that we can get that on people's calendars this year. And then we'll just be open all the time for people that want to come and spend the weekend or spend a night or a week or a month or whatever it is. And then, you know, we'll have different accommodation options. So I think that's going to be fun too. So it'll be a nice, because, you know, right now I'm doing all of my training online, which I love, 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 because it's just like I am in people's lives like 24/7. You know, you have people texting you at 10 at night being like, oh, you know, this is my, and it's, you know, it's other things, not just training. So it's like you really get intimate in people's lives and that, and I really love that. But it should be a nice balance, I think, to have this like in-person interaction back and then have my online stuff. So it's both areas that I love, and I think they'll complement each other really nice. But I am excited just to have people come out and put on these live events and stuff like that, because there's nothing like the energy from seeing people just, you know, complete obstacles that they never thought they could, or just, you know, nail a goal or not think that they can go on. And then, you know, they do one more lap or whatever it is. I'm very honored and very grateful that I can do these things and be a part of other people's fitness journeys in such like an intimate way, right?
Yeah, as a personal coach there, I saw when you were doing a lot of the live videos and stuff, talking about coming back from injury or, you know, stuff like that. And then you also, you're doing an online prep for World's Toughest Mudder, I think I saw also, right?
Yeah, that just started September 1st, so it's just day two now. But yeah, that's cool because, you know, again, I do a lot of like the one-on-one stuff, and it's more like it's very much a group thing, right? So it's like, hey, this is what you're going to run if you're doing 25 miles, 50 miles, 75 miles. If those are your goals, this is what you run. And not everybody is doing World's Toughest Mudder, but it just gives people like, okay, so if I'm doing 25 miles in 24 hours, I have to do 3 miles today and 10 pull-ups or whatever it is, right? And then they have like their strength component, their mobility component, and then they have like, it's either like nutrition or recovery or how to get better sleep or just like a mental tidbit. So they always have like those aspects, and then running form as well. So it's like everything, all like all these things that I've been working on with people and in different like clinics and different settings and programs. And then I just kind of amalgamated them and put them all together under this like World's Toughest Mudder training umbrella. And it's been something that has been kind of stewing in my head for a few years, right? Because it's always like, okay, so just run a ton of miles and do a ton of pull-ups. And it's like, for something like World's Toughest Mudder or an Ultra Beast or whatever, that doesn't quite do it, right? There's that whole other aspect that people just aren't touching on, and that you learn over time as an endurance athlete But it's a slow process, and it's like gathering, you know, from here and there and putting it all together. And that's a long, arduous journey. So if you can, like, as much as you can pull from somebody else that's done it, right? And that's really all it is just pulling all these little cords together. There's just a ton of stuff that I can do there. So it's been really fun. And it's something that I've been planning in my head for a long time, but just haven't had the time to do. And this year I'm like, okay, so now, you know, I have all these different programs. Now it's time to click them all together and to put something forward for people so that they can take it to World Toughest Mudder. And that should be really, really cool just to watch, you know, how the team goes out and how many of them actually hit their goals. And, you know, if that, like, mental nutrition recovery, that aspect, running form, all that stuff that people don't usually include in their training, if that helps them out, that's going to be a really neat little experiment, you know, because it's something that I believe, but maybe it doesn't help. Maybe it's just, you know, running the miles and doing the pull-ups or whatever it is. And I have a lot of technique work, right? So it'll be like just different, like, weird things that I've used to, like, get people able to climb a wall or, you know, be able to do funky monkey. So it's not just like, oh, you're just going to hang from a bar and do pull-ups. It's like, okay, so you're going to do these things with your hands and hook your heel here and then spin, like, just making them do really weird things in the gym, but things that is like you get the technique and the feel in your body so that you can complete these obstacles. So there's just a lot of different aspects to this program. It might sound a little crazy and it's almost hard to explain just because there's so many pieces, but it's almost like in my head, it's just putting those pieces together for people so they can use that and take that and add it to that training program. So you have those multiple layers on it.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct on the fitness and the mental prowess, where the nutrition really comes in on those longer races, and you're trying to make those personal goals on those type of races. Myself, I started working after 39 years on this planet. I'd never gotten involved in any type of group workout or functional training up until this last year. And I started working with Coach Brandon Chin out of Spartan SGX out of Bothell, Washington. And just talking with him, texting with him.
Oh, I was just saying, I'm a big Brandon Chin fan. He is awesome.
Yeah, it's a real funny story. So my wife actually worked with him like 15 years ago when he was straight out of high school. He was working for an auto parts store, and she was actually his manager. And a little while back, early beginning of this year, end of last year, I don't remember which, we had what we call a Beast Connection seminar, where we brought together some of the Beast OCR team, and it was a seminar on travel light, travel cheap, get your free races, and it was put on by Brandon. And as soon as we walked into the place that was hosting it, my wife and him instantly had a connection because they knew each other, and it made it a lot easier. Up until that point, she'd been kind of sitting in the backseat going, yeah, I don't know, but what is this junk that you guys are doing? I don't get it. I don't want to be involved. And then as soon as she saw Brandon there and met Jody, it was just immediately over. She was ready to go. We've been to, you know, Montana, Portland, all over with Spartan and other races, just because she likes going out and hanging out with Brandon and Jody and all them. So Brandon has been a big change in my OCR game.
Awesome. Yeah, he's a great guy and a good mentor, right? And just kind of a really good guiding light in terms of putting all those pieces together, like I was talking about, and just connecting the whole community, right? Like, he really brings everybody in. So I can see how, you know, he just, it's amazing if you think about the amount of influence that he's had around just people, like people that maybe even three people back, right? He inspires somebody, maybe directly, maybe indirectly. They inspire, like, it just spiders out. And it's just mind-blowing to think about how much influence one person can have.
It really is. And when it comes to the racing community, yeah, I've only been personally, I mean, I did my first Warrior Dash because, oddly enough, Warrior was my intro to this 4 years ago. And I did my first Warrior Dash, and it was with a couple of friends from work. And afterwards, I was like, that was a lot of fun. Let's do it again. And then I found the Beast OCR team, and I started connecting with people on there. And of course, I don't know if you've ever met Pretty Mike. He's the long-haired guy that's always traveling with the Beast OCR team. And him and I went to preschool together, you know, 37 years ago.
Wow.
And so he he actually gave me my first Spartan race. He's like, well, you know, I know you like Rugged Maniac. I know you like Warrior Dash and some of these other locals. Why don't you come to a Spartan with me? And he loves the thing where he says, give me an obstacle and I'll figure out a way to overcome it. And he says to me, come to a Spartan. And I say, oh, man, Spartan, that's just way too much money. You're paying five times as much for the same thing you can get for a $20 Groupon. And he's like, no, it's very different. Here, let me give you a code and you come out and do it. And so I came out and did my first Spartan, and then I had to come back and sign up for a whole bunch more.
Right.
And it's amazing how the whole atmosphere and the direction of my life actually changed at that point when I got involved in OCR, because you know, at that point I was pushing almost 270 pounds and I'm only 5'10". That's a lot of weight to carry on a small frame. And getting into the Spartans, getting into all the other OCR stuff, getting into my first organized workouts, you know, twisting and bending my body into shapes that I didn't think it would ever get twisted into in order to complete an obstacle. And now, you know, I'm down, I'm about 235 right now, but the difference in the makeup of my body is very different. There's a lot more muscle and a whole lot less fat. And that's all because of racing and because of getting involved with a coach, you know, similar to you. You're a great coach, it sounds like, and talking with Charity and some of the others about the program that you've been putting together. You know, it sounds like you've been given really good life direction also with your team.
Yeah, I mean, that's what good coaches do, right? You just don't throw out a training program and hope for the best, right? There's always that extra component, right, that, you know, that's really what a good coach does. You know, I'm a serious firm believer in that. It's not, and I wouldn't want to just throw out training programs, right, and have no like give and take. Like I say, like I'm in people's lives. I know so much stuff about each one of my athletes that I feel like I'm almost in a lot of ways the only person that knows them that well, right? Like, cause I get to see all sides of them, and I'm just really honored that I get to, you know, get to figure out life with them, right? And kind of help them to, you know, in a lot of ways, it's like, we'll have like talks on eating disorders or like all these like really deep stuff that people are like scared to bring out to the world. And yet they let me in, right? And I get to be a part of like figuring out how to make their lives better and, you know, assist them in making better decisions and ones that align better with their goals. And that's huge, right? Is just to be that person, right? So it's not only like sharing successes in their like amazing race that they just had and they just took 10 minutes off their 5K time or whatever it is, right? Like that's amazing stuff, right? And it feels so good as a coach. But then there's little things even that you see where somebody's just been like super negative about themselves their whole lives or something, and they get this pattern. And so you're really trying to work with them to kind of see the amazing person that they are. And then you just see it like little and little that they're just growing and they're able to appreciate how amazing that they are because they see themselves through, they start to see themselves through your eyes, right? So it's those kind of impacts as a coach, which is just like, that's amazing, right? That gets me out of bed in the morning.
That's awesome to hear about that kind of story. And I, like I said, I've talked with a couple of people that either have been trained by you or interacted with you in different ways. And every one of them just kind of said the same thing, that you know, Coach Alley is going to get you through whatever your obstacle is in life. You know, it may not even be on the course from what I understand. It's just the obstacle in life. So it's just awesome to hear that about you. And
I mean, there's just so much overlap, right, between life and racing, right? You go through the same problems everywhere, right? It's like once you conquer something in your mind, off course or on course, it transfers, right? You're changing as a human being. You're getting stronger and you're getting more able to meet obstacles, whether it's on course or off course or whatever, right? It's cheesy, but it is totally like the whole Spartan obstacle immunity thing. There's a lot of truth to that, right? And as cheesy as it is absolutely correct. And I see it every day, you know, that people just develop this obstacle immunity on the course or in life and it transfers.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of Joe DeCina's little blurbs and listening to some of his podcast, and you hear it over and over from him, just spartan up and do it. You know, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's on the course or in life or whatever. You know, you're just a human being. Everyone's got problems. You can just spartan up and get over it. And then that's what, you know, myself, every race I try to add another obstacle that I couldn't do before. So when I first started, you know, I was big and round and, you know, walls. I couldn't do walls by myself. I always had to have somebody help me over the walls. Now I'm down to the 10-foot wall is about the only one I can't get over on my own. I need somebody's shoulder to get me up high enough to grab it. But, you know, now I can do the 7 and the 8 foot. And, you know, I was never able to do that before. And then the next race, you know, I've been practicing working on Bender because I'm going to be at Spartan here this weekend. forgetting the calendar there, but wow. I'll be at Spartan Seattle, and I'm sure they'll have Bender there. And Bender is one that intimidated me last year and to the beginning of this year. And, you know, my goal for this Saturday is to get up and over Bender. And if I got to sit there all day long at that one, I'm going to figure it out. And more than likely, yeah. Coach Brandon will show up and give me what I need to get over it, because that's what he did in Montana. I was racing with Jody, and Coach Brandon comes up running with this group of trainees, and he's like, all right, Jody, we're going to get you up over this. And he just kept talking her through until she got up and over. And, you know, after she got down, she was, you know, crying because she couldn't believe she finally had done it, because it was one that she had personally had a lot of trouble with. And that particular race at Spartan, Montana, you know, the elevation was getting you, everything was getting you. And I think Bender was about 8-9 miles in to the beast. So it was not an easy point to be there, and then just poof, here's Brandon to talk you over it.
Oh, yeah, it was funny one year at the Tahoe. Remember when they had Monkey in the Middle? So it was Twister, Monkey Bars, Twister. Like almost all the women fell off it, and Yancey told me that. So I'm on the Yancey roster, he's my coach, and I'm running along, and I see him, and I'm like, oh, now I can't fail the obstacle because it's Yancey, right? And this guy is just like the most. He's like a ray of sunshine, just like blasting in concentrate form right at you. So I was just fingers by the end of that obstacle, but I made it across. And I swear to goodness, if he wasn't there yelling at me the entire time, there's just no way. But it's funny how some people just have that ability. And he has this like uncanny, super unique ability to just make you feel like you can do anything, you know, and it's partly because that's who he is. And, you know, he's overcome so much in life, and he's just the strongest, like, littlest dude, but he's just so mentally and physically strong and just has so much, you know, enthusiastic emotional presence, let's call it, that it's just infectious. And there's just not an obstacle I don't think he could complete if he's around, because he's able to, like, you know, make anybody do anything with just his, like, over the top enthusiasm.
Yep. So a question for you this year, this has kind of been a year off from racing. I haven't seen too much from you this year posting about races. Is that kind of what it's been, is getting into the farm, getting settled in? And
exactly. Yeah. This year is 100% off. And everybody's like, oh, did you do that on purpose because of the toughest series? But it was just well planned, right? That just ended up working out that way. I knew before World's Toughest Mudder that I was going to take a year back and just kind of focus on the kids and moving and all that. So that's been my thing this year. So I will be doing some stuff next year probably, but less, you know, like I did a good run there. I started OCR in 2011. And after about 2014, I was like racing somewhere almost every weekend, usually like twice, you know, 2-day races and stuff. And I could probably do it, absolutely, if I was like single and didn't have kids. But it's just, you know, the kids are getting older and it's time for me to just kind of like back up a little bit and do more of that. But for sure next year, I'll be doing more like local races and stuff like that. It's just this year has pretty much been a write-off and just time to focus on other things, which is just super well planned in my life too, because I had been doing that a lot. And I'm not like, you know, those people that like, if they can't work, it's like they lose their mind. They just can't. But for me, there's so many aspects you know, who I am and what I'm doing and what I'm excited and passionate about, that, you know, if I can't race, it's like, whatever. Like, I love racing. It's fun. You know, I love the people, love the community. I love to be around the people and all that, but I can take it, you know, and put it down for a year and come back and pick it up and be okay, because I just have so much other stuff that I'm doing and so much other stuff that I'm passionate about. And one of those things is definitely just hanging out with my kids this year. So I'm really just putting all my energy into that and kind of developing the farm and getting the business kind of thing set up here, and then clients, right? So luckily I'm able to still almost race, since I can live vicariously through all of them and not have to do the travel. Which has been just absolutely awesome. But next year I'll probably at least do a couple of things. Maybe I'm thinking even like a road marathon. So that's something I haven't done for a while. And then some, you know, local OCRs. I'll probably end up doing some of the races here and stuff, just to kind of test them out. It should be fun next year to slowly get back into it. But it's also been really nice just to take the year off.
Yeah, to go from last year, yeah, you podiumed quite a bit, and it wasn't just in the world's toughest mudder or tough mudder. I saw there's a pentathlon and some other non-OCR where you just, you know, looked like you just had a great year to take a year back and reflect on it afterwards and spend time with family, from what I know.
Yeah, the pentathlon was actually early in this year, and I planned to train a lot more for it. I didn't train that hard. So it's like a really weird sport. And the only reason I heard about it was because they were going to add obstacle course racing, right? And get into the Olympics with pentathlon. I was like, what kind of a crazy sport is that? It's like fencing, show jumping on a horse, but you've never met the horse before. They just give it to you. And then you have to like go and jump this course with it, swimming, and then running and shooting. And so those were the five sports. And like, it seems like a really random clash of things, but it's actually, they were trying to way back find out who's the best soldier. So it's kind of ironic they call it modern pentathlon, because at this point it's really not all that modern. So it's a really like, because, you know, to be good at fencing and then riding a horse and then running and swimming, like there's a lot of different aspects there. And I grew up riding horses and show jumping. So I'm like, okay, I have that. And then running, obviously, I can do. And then the swimming, I used to be a triathlete. So I just really had to learn how to fence, which was really challenging. So I got my butt handed to me in the fencing. So I won the swim, and then I got my butt handed to me in the fencing. And that put me way back. And so I went into the run. And so at that, so each one is very separate. And then at the very end, they let whoever's fastest go. So they held me back like so long. Just let me go for the run, because I just got stabbed repeatedly in the fencing rounds. But then I just like literally just ran everybody down. I couldn't even shoot the target for the life of me. We were shooting to the sun. Nobody was hitting the mark except for like the best shooters. But that certainly wasn't me. So they time me out every single round, because if you don't make your three shots or whatever it is, they time you out and you get to run. So I was pretty much just doing 400 meter repeats with a 50 second break. So thankfully I can run decently. So I caught up, but yeah, it was a really, really fun sport. I can see why it's not really big, because I don't know who does those things or who has the resources. Like, it's not really cheap to fence and ride horses and swim. I mean, you need a lot of, it's not like a pair of running shoes, right, that you just head out your door. So it's a very complicated sport, but it was really fun. And it's a lot like OCR, just because it's like constantly like weird new things that get thrown at you, and all these, you know, you have to be good at so much different stuff and then have that like mental piece to hold it all together. So it did remind me a lot of OCR, and it was a lot of fun. I'd like to do it again for sure.
Yeah, that it is kind of like OCR, because like with the shooting, you had to do a run each time you timed out, and with, you know, OCR, depending on which brand you're with, either you have penalty burpees, penalty laps, or must complete obstacles. So there is the very similar with that. And then the whole idea of going from fencing to horses to running and shooting, they just don't seem to mix as something that that I would see myself ever doing. And seeing that you did that, it was just like, wow, that's a really strange mix to get out there and do.
Yeah, that's totally what attracted me to it. I'm like, what a strange, random mix of skills. you know, and I feel like that's probably what brought me into OCR too, right? Being like, oh, wow, you have to be able to like climb walls and do rigs and carry stuff. And, you know, it's like, it's a lot more dynamic than, say, going for a run, swimming and biking, right? So like, you just have to be like really good at exercising, right? To be a triathlete. Like my husband always makes fun of me because I was a triathlete and I was really into it. But it's very, very, you just keep going forward, right? And you have to be like an aerobic powerhouse to be good at triathlon. And there are various, like swimming, obviously that is very, very, very skill-based. So there is that, but it's just not, you know, it's so much more dynamic than say just running on the road. So much more, right? So much more interesting that way. But then OCR, pentathlon or something like that just takes it to another level, just in terms of having to be, you know, like a very diverse athlete and have like a very wide range of skills that you have to bring in.
Yeah, that's definitely something, something there. Triathlons, oddly enough, that's on my 2020 list where we're going to BeastNet, the three of us are going to get out and do a triathlon sprint, which is a much shorter version of the triathlon. And, you know, so far, two of the three of us sink like rocks. So the swimming aspect is something that we're trying to figure out. Any advice on that one?
Yeah. Because you can't win a triathlon with the swim, but you can definitely lose the triathlon with the swim. Like if you start off just uncomfortable in the water, even if your swim time's slow, as long as you make the cutoff, you're fine. But if you're uncomfortable in the water and you're like risk of drowning the entire time, it's just really an unpleasant experience. So, you know, you don't have to be fast in the water, but try to get as comfortable as you can. But yeah, I'm really into like teching out freestyle swimming and stuff like that. So if you guys need any help with that, I have a few of my clients now that are doing Ironman, half Ironman, some of them doing sprints, things like that. It's been fun because I've really got to like, I was actually one of the first NCCP triathlon coaches in Canada. I was in this like pilot program that they did way back in Calgary in like 2006 or something. It was a, you know, usually with the NCCP, I don't know if you guys know that one. It's like the Canadian certification for like sports. It's like all the Olympic sports fall under this umbrella of coaching. And the triathlon came up and I was very intense and very, very technique oriented for the swim. And it's very, very in depth. So I got to the point where I was like a super freestyle swim nerd. And so it's been really fun going back to my old like triathlon programming days, and particularly like teching people on the swim and figuring out like, okay, so, you know, you're dropping your elbow here, or you're not finishing here, or, you know, your timing is off, or just like, there's so many little intricacies. So as much as swimming or triathlon, I kind of joke about it being just very much like about being able to go forward and having a huge aerobic engine. There is like the aspect of the swim, it's really, really, really easy to, it's not about strength, right? You see these like 8-year-old girls in Australia, that's where I learned to do freestyle, and they just like fly across. Like I'd be doing my like speed sets, they'd be doing their warm up, and they're twice as, you know, they're out and back in the pool twice as fast. I am like these little kids, and it's not because they're strong, right? It's just because their technique is on point because they've been swimming, you know, at a high level since they were like two, right? Because Australia is so big into swimming. But so there's all these like little aspects, and I love nerding out on them. So if you guys ever want help, just let me know. And I can definitely like, there's some of it's just like these little tweaks where they're like, oh, you know, and like there's so many drills that you can use. And I'm not into doing drills for the sake of doing drills. Like you need to be able to, running, swimming, doesn't matter, cycling, you need to be able to use that drill to make the movement better. So I'm really into like using drills to fix issues and then bringing it into the swim, which I think is important. And it's a good thing for even OCR athletes to, because there is swimming. There's a ton of swimming in OCR. And as long as it's the same with triathlon, as long as you're comfortable in the water, provided you don't want to win the race, but it does make a big deal to be comfortable in the water versus feel like you're drowning and your rest of your race, you know, goes out the window because there's no way you can keep your heart rate down while you're swimming if you feel like you're drowning.
Yeah, a lot of the OCRs, at least the ones that I've been paying attention to, you're also swimming in just shy of a frozen pond like Tahoe or West Virginia. Sounds like it was fairly cool, but it was still the warm months. But everybody I've talked to about the Tahoe where they're having the championships, is that swim is just the killer for everybody there, because it's freezing cold water and it just shuts down your body.
Yeah,
plus awesome. The fact
and
you're swimming.
Yeah, like the dunk wall at the top, so cute. And then you run downhill into the wind and then you get to that lake swim. So it's like, it's just like an evil mix of things. But so yeah, if you're not comfortable in the water and you try to swim in icy cold water, it's going to get real uncomfortable fast. But for me, like I hit it, I'm freezing cold and, you know, like I hate my life, but I never feel like I'm going to drown because I feel like comfortable enough in the water. So I feel like that's the point that an OCR athlete at least needs to be at, where you're comfortable enough that when you hit really icy cold water, you're not afraid you're going to drown.
Yeah, that's something that, you know, originally we our group was supposed to be down at Tahoe here in a few weeks, and it's not going to work out for us. But that was something that that we're all kind of looking at and going, man, swimming is not our thing. Cold swimming is going to be even worse. And and that wasn't what stopped us. There's actually some other outside influences. Pretty Mike went and did the Spartan trifecta down in Hawaii, and he came back with mangled feet, which it's been 2 weeks and he's still not wearing shoes. So, you know, that's yeah, he sent me way too many pictures of his feet, and they definitely he definitely mangled them. But that was his last big chance to get Hawaii, so he made sure and got it.
Wow, way to go, Pretty Mike! Way to tough it out.
Yeah, that was definitely it. Looking at what was left of his feet afterwards, he definitely put in at least the entire sprint with his feet on fire because there was nothing left of the skin. So. Give him a couple more weeks and hopefully he'll be fully up and running again. I think he's planning on doing the Seattle Beast because he has to get one more beast to get his double trifecta this year. He's been really big into Spartan, and every year there's something that keeps him away from getting his triple. And you know, this year he's looking to just close out the year with a double. Myself, you know, I got my first trifecta this year, and I'm running an extra beast just because I was defeated, but I finished the Montana Beast. So now I need to get back out there and run another beast so that I feel better about my performance in a beast. And of course I have to go back to Montana and redo that one because I can't have a 10 and a half hour beast being my best at a Montana event.
Yeah, no kidding, right?
So looking forward, the rest of this year, you're going to finish setting up the farm and continue training your team. Do you have any, you said you're looking at some local races next year. Is there anything that you kind of penciled in, maybe traveling south of the border in April and saying hi to us in Seattle or anything, or anything like that on the docket?
We actually booked the trips to head out there for both of the Spartan events, but we were hoping to, but we'll see for this year actually. But I love the venue, I love the people, so I think if there's going to be any race that I do next year, it's definitely going to be Seattle. So and the Seattle Tough Mudder is just amazing too. It's one of my favorite courses. It's just a really fun time. A lot of the Tough Mudder community shows up, so that's another one that it's actually funny because people are like, oh, you're from Canada. Why do you keep going to Seattle? And I'm like, it's so close compared to like even driving to Alberta, right? To Red Deer or whatever. It's just way closer in Seattle. And then the venues are awesome. And obviously since U.S. Spartan took over Canada, they're going to be under the same umbrella. But definitely you saw a difference in terms of the quality of the race as well, right? In Seattle versus in Canada, just historically, Seattle's just been like super top-notch production and the best obstacles and all that. So, but yeah, you'll definitely see me in Seattle again. I just don't know when that's going to be. It's tough too because we have like bears and cougars and stuff. So we've been setting up perimeter fences and all that. But I'm still a little bit paranoid leaving the animals here just in case, you know, we have to run off a bear in the middle of the night or something like that. I always just, yeah, it's weird paranoia, but I'm always just terrified a bear is going to break in and eat all of our pets.
That's definitely something that you get in the wilderness. Down here in the city, we don't get much of that. It's Tough Mudder Seattle. I forgot to bring that up. BeastNet, we're actually getting out there. That's going to be our first for all three of us. That's going to be our first Tough Mudder. Out of all the races we've done, we've avoided Tough Mudder, mostly because Pretty Mike's afraid of electricity. And we look forward to getting out and finally doing it over there in Black Diamond. And I believe Charity's coming down, and I think Melissa's coming down. There's a handful of the team from north of the border coming down. It'd be real cool to meet more of them and see them again. Because we don't see each other often enough, being so far apart, but yet so close.
Yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, it's a good team down here, and it's nice that we have that kind of sisterhood going.
All right, and now we're going to take a quick pause so we can hear from our sponsors.
Like what you hear? Make sure and subscribe and review us on your favorite podcast platform. Be sure to find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. If you're using YouTube, please click the little red subscribe icon, then click the little bell for notifications of future episodes. And if you could, give us a thumbs up.
And we're back.
And then the Tough Mudder, their event is different from Spartan. I've heard people talk about it more than once, where Spartan is a lot of individual effort and pushing yourself, as where Tough Mudder, a lot of the obstacles are actually designed to where you can't complete them alone, or you have to try excruciatingly hard to get through the obstacles if you're trying to do it alone. Is that something that you've kind of learned?
No, 100%. They try to make some of the obstacles in Tough Mudder require teamwork and camaraderie. That's their whole thing, tougher together, right? That people have to work together to complete obstacles. And Spartan, yeah, it's very much like, you know, in the open ways, you can help each other and things like that. But it's very much the course is built to see who's the fastest, right? So it's a totally different mentality that comes. And it was kind of funny how the Tough Mudder had that race series then where you're like helping people, but they're your competitor. But I found that dynamic really cool as well, right? That, you know, the end goal, yeah, is to win, but you want to get there as ethically as possible and helping as many people as possible. And then you would feel good about your victory. So it's like there's that parallel that we were talking about earlier in terms of life, right? That, yeah, the goal is to do well and to succeed and to achieve your goals, right? But the big goal is to help everybody else along the way, right? So there was that, it was weird, right, with the Tough Mudder race series, but there was that kind of like, you know, symbolism or something. And there was this kind of like pride in helping other people and like just being a good person over even like being a good athlete. And I thought that was kind of neat. But no more. Now they're back to the way it was. And it definitely makes a lot more sense now. But I do kind of miss that like really interesting aspect of it where it was a race, but it was based on camaraderie still.
Yeah, I saw, I don't remember if it was in your feed or just when I was watching the races last year. And I think it was a Tough Mudder where it was like you and Lindsay Webster were racing, and then she stopped or you stopped to help people over a wall and whatnot. It was just one of those, even though it's a race, it's a team.
Yeah. Oh man, it was funny because we thought that the first two people, Rose and Mel, were over the other side of the wall. And then Lindsay and I and somebody else were running together. Was it Rhea? Yes, Lindsay, me and Rhea were running together. And then Lindsay got up over, so then she pulled me over, and then we both pulled Ray over, and we didn't realize that there was the other two girls on the other side, but she, when she turned around, she saw them, so not only did she pull us over, but she ran, well, Ray and I were getting down, and took the other girls up over the wall, and it was just like, oh my goodness, and I guess Bun, Ray's husband, got that on video, and it went viral, obviously, and she was so embarrassed. She's like, that's just what we do in Tough Mudder, because she's just the most humble, amazing person, and like, that's just, like, they caught that moment on video, but that's 100% who she was. Like, she would stop at Loch Ness and help every single person out of the water before she went on. And she still won most of the events, right? But she's just like on camera, off camera. It's like that just was like the epitome of who Lindsay was, which I thought was really cute and really awesome that that video got out. But you could tell at the same time she was like super embarrassed because she was like, that's just what we do in the Tough Mudder. Oh, man. And she didn't want to be like, you know, set up as this example when it was just the Tough Mudder spirit that was being shown. But she definitely, like I was saying, that weird little dynamic in the race series that was built on camaraderie, she totally epitomizes that. Like that's 100% who she is essentially.
That's awesome. And, you know, I look forward to seeing that out on the course. Like I said, we're doing, the three of us are going out doing our first Tough Mudder, and we're probably going to run Mike back and forth over and over again through the, what do they call that, the electroshock or whatever, and just keep running him back and forth until he's not afraid of getting zapped anymore. Because, you know, that's the thing that he kept talking about, is that one obstacle is what was keeping him out of it. And as soon as Warrior Dash canceled everything, that took, that entire race weekend was open for him, and there was no more excuses. So he just had to sign up, especially with the discount or the free race, whatever it was that Tough Mudder offered to all the Warrior participants, as a thing to say thanks for being with our competitor, but we want to see you on our course now. So we finally took that obstacle away, and Michael's going to get out there and finally conquer a Tough Mudder, which myself, I've been looking at him. I've been looking at the obstacles. It's just like, man, I really want to get out there and do that. You know, myself, I've been pushing into some of the endurance. I've been doing weight carries on my jogs and runs, trying to build up my endurance. A couple of the beasts just did the Go Ruck Star course, which is the 50-mile carry. And, you know, that's the stuff where myself, I see myself going. And honestly, next year when you get up to hosting, I'll have to grab my trailer and grab Mike and Kyle and head up that way and check out your races, because, you know, everybody talked about the Corn Maze race and the amazing race and just how awesome it is. And I know the three of us want to get up there and experience that. And with your setup up there, we'll be able to bring our family up too.
Yeah, exactly. I hope they like ponies and goats and chickens. And, you know, my kids definitely, that's all they do is climb trees and play with the animals these days. So I do really feel like here there's something for anybody. And they're always just really excited to show that off and have people come out and hang out with our little family and, you know, meet theirs and have fun and just, you know, enjoy this amazing place that we get the privilege of tending to.
Yeah. So we're coming up on the 1 hour mark, and that's usually where we try to keep the length. Kind of feel like we got to know you pretty well, talking with you about racing and stuff. What would you say to anybody looking to do their first OCR or to get more involved in the OCR world? What would you say to them?
I say just go and do it. Like, a lot of people are like, no, I need to be like 110 pounds and fit into spandex. And it's like, no. Like, just go out there and do it. There's, you know, you go into an open wave, you go into a Tough Mudder, you are not alone. Like, and you will see examples of people that are not, you know, cookie cutter fitness, getting it done. And that's 100% what it's about. It's just getting it done and getting out there and experiencing something, right? And you don't have to be super fit for that to happen. That's how it happens. So just, you know, do the training, obviously, if you can, and be as prepared as you can. But, you know, even at the top level, nobody's as prepared as they want to be. So just get out there and enjoy it and do what you can. And, you know, do your best. That's all it is. And then you'll just get better and better from there. Keep working on your weaknesses. And pretty soon it'll come along. And that's the magic of it, right? Is not being able to do things perfectly. If you went out on course tomorrow and you were 100 pounds and could wear spandex wonderfully and did everything like perfect, and, you know, are that like picture of what you have in your mind, maybe, of that top level OCR athlete, well, that would kind of suck, right? Because you'd never get that like feeling of achievement, because it would all just be so easy. So just be grateful that you get to struggle right now and that it's not perfect and that your journey is not perfect. And then you will appreciate where you get, and you'll be grateful for every single thing that you have to work for. So Yeah, I just say be grateful and get out there and just do what you freaking can and have fun.
Well, I don't know that I can top that. That is exactly the message that I think we need to get people out there and just get them on the course. And it's a fast-growing sport, so it's going to be a lot of fun. And I really appreciate you taking the time to get on the phone with us. I know that calling in from Canada probably wasn't free, so I really appreciate that. And we look forward to seeing you on course and coming up and seeing you at the farm.
Yes, please do. We love our visitors. So come hang out. We'll do some trail running and play on some obstacles and just hang out and have a good time.
Does your business need first aid, AED, OSHA, flagging, or other safety training? James Safety Services is your one-stop shop. Find them on Facebook today at James Safety Services WA and ask for a quote on hosting your training needs.
Thanks for listening to the BeastNet podcast. If you haven't done it yet, find us on Facebook. Like and share the podcast. Give us a review on iTunes or Spotify. All these things will help to expand the show in the future. This show is brought to you by James Safety Services in partnership with Beast OCR. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what you think and what you like to hear. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at beastocr.com.